If you haven't done so, I would encourage you to turn to 2 Corinthians chapters 4 and 5. We're going to be focusing on that today. And if you have some kind of marker, either you can use your finger, I guess, or some other way of marking it, kind of keep open to Psalm 116 as well. We're going to do some comparison of what the psalmist does with what Paul will do for us here in 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians has some unique things about it, not the least of which is the Apostle Paul spends a great deal of time defending and describing his own ministry. And as he does that, what he does is he also lays out for us some parallels of not only what he experiences as a person who's been called by God to do his work, but also what the church will experience also. They're not all that dissimilar. In fact, Paul is drawing some parallels to what he experiences and to what the church is going to experience. In addition to that, I think what we see in 2 Corinthians is somewhat an extension of what he has done in 1 Corinthians. You may remember in the book of 1 Corinthians, really early in the book, one of the things the Apostle Paul does there is he describes for us the contrast between God's wisdom and worldly wisdom. And he says, basically, they're on opposite poles. They're very different. In godly wisdom, he has shown to us his wisdom through Jesus Christ. Worldly wisdom is just something totally different. And those ways of difference, those differences become very clear as the Apostle Paul goes through 1 Corinthians. I think a little bit of what we see here in 2 Corinthians is somewhat an extension of that. There are still some contrasts between the worldly ways of doing things and our Christian ways of doing things. And I hope that becomes clear as we come through here. I want to do three things in this that I think Paul is doing. Number one, he starts out with some comparisons. He compares the faith that he has to faithful people of old. And when I say of old, I mean all the way back in the Old Testament. Then he's going to give us these contrasts. He's going to contrast numerous things that give us reasons not to lose heart. And if he's doing nothing here, he's encouraging his group, as Paul often does. And then in the final section, he actually finishes by reminding us of our heavenly home. Again, an encouraging fact in and of itself. But let's start with where Paul starts here, and that is he compares his faith to the faith of people of old. And that's where we're going to look at what he does here with what the psalmist in Psalm 116 does. Paul says in verse 13 of 2 Corinthians 4, he says, "I believed, so I spoke." And that's actually a quote that he takes out of the book of Psalms, Psalm 116. And you see, one of the things that he is trying to do here is he is identifying with the very same sentiment expressed in that psalm. The psalmist voices a living expression of faith. Now, it's interesting that what the psalmist does in Psalm 116 and verse, what we see here in Psalm 116 and verse 10 is that the writer speaks somewhat out of affliction, out of struggle. Psalm 116, verse 10 says, "I believed even when I spoke, I am greatly afflicted." That can also be stated this way: "I had faith even when I declared I'm suffering acutely." That's another translation of that same section there, Psalm 116 and verse 10. And you see, Paul adapts that idea and he uses it as this is the same thing that I'm experiencing. You remember, perhaps, in earlier in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 8, Paul tells his audience, says, "We were under severe affliction, even to the point of being discouraged with life itself." Now, I know we don't often think of the Apostle Paul as struggling with despair because he was a great man of faith. And yet, people of faith do that. They struggle. They feel those same feelings. They have moments when they feel despair or when they're discouraged or when they want to doubt or when they want to give up. It's not unusual. It's not something we need to give into, but it's not unusual for Christians to experience that. And Paul is simply saying, you know, I had the same thing. I have faith, even in my afflictions. I still remain faithful. And the psalmist in Psalm 116 does that very thing. He asserts his faith despite his struggles. In verses 3 through 7, he will say things like, "The snares of death encompassed me." He says, "The pangs of Sheol laid hold of me." And yet he will go on in this section. He will say also, "Gracious is the Lord and righteous." You see, in the midst of that, he still asserts his faith. He still kind of hangs in there and just maintains his faith throughout it all. He renders to God whatever he is owed to God, whatever vows he has made. In verses 14 and 18, he says the same thing. "I will pay my vows to the Lord in the presence of all his people." And I know we don't take vows today, and that's okay. The point is, he made good on his commitments. He made good on the faith that he has expressed, the confession that he made of faith to God. And as a demonstration of his faith, he continues to call on him. Verse 17, "I will offer to you the sacrifice of thanksgiving and call on the name of the Lord." You see, there's a living voice of faith that we get of Psalm 116, and it's the same living voice that Paul says, "I have that same faith. I believe, so I speak. I believe, so I continue to have faith. I continue to confess my belief in Jesus Christ." Paul extends that into faith into the New Testament, certainly. But it's interesting that the writer in Psalm also, he's sort of recognizing what he's dealing with, just as Paul is recognizing the struggles he's dealing with. In fact, in Psalm 116, verse 11, the psalmist comes out and he sort of expresses a certain shock to me as he looks around the world and he says, "All men are liars." You know, he looks around at what he experienced and he says, "Everybody's just a liar." Whew. I mean, that's a pretty shocking thing for a person who's trying to be faithful to God. Doesn't it kind of get us sometimes when here we are trying to be faithful and we see what everybody else does and we go, kind of scratch our heads and I don't understand why they're doing that. It is mysterious to us. It is a struggle for us to kind of live in that environment. The stunning revelation not only alarmed him, but it kind of set him at odds with the world. And yet, he turns back to God. In verse 7 of Psalm 116, he finds his rest in God. There's that word we talked about this morning in the book of Hebrews. He finds his rest and his peace in God alone. He can't get it from the world, but he finds it in God. And you see, Paul takes that faith, and he says essentially the same thing. We got all these struggles. Here I am trying to be a workman for God. Again, this is the Apostle Paul speaking to us. And yet he says, we have that faith and so we speak. Now that's Paul telling us something about his ministry. But I think it's also Paul telling us something about us as Christians. We speak. We act. We confess our faith and we act upon that faith. It is an expression of faithful people, really in any age. And isn't it interesting that the psalmist in Psalm 116, hundreds of years even before the Apostle Paul, expressed that same voice of living faith. And those of us who have expressed faith in Jesus Christ, we carry on that same living faith. We believe, so we speak. We're not talking about something new here. We're talking about something very ancient, very traditional. Is that a word we can use? You know, this is a good tradition. This faith that he expresses is a very good tradition. We speak and we proclaim his name. And there's another parallel that the writer makes here with the psalmist. In Psalm 116 and verse 17, the psalmist ends with thanksgiving. Take a look at what the Apostle Paul says here in chapter 4 and verse 15. "For it is for all your sake, so that as grace extends to more and more people, it may increase thanksgiving to the glory of God." Once again, thanksgiving to God becomes one of those things that's an ancient idea. Give thanks to God. Be thankful to God. And you see, Paul is simply saying we do the same thing. We give thanks. And what we do in expressing our faith causes more and more people to give thanks. We are also confident in the presence of God. And that's why Paul can say, we believe and so we speak. The psalmist, interesting, that you've probably heard this particular passage mentioned, Psalm 116 and verse 15. You probably hear this at funerals. But I want you to see the context out of which Paul says it. He says, "Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints." If you've been to a Christian funeral, I'm almost certain you've heard that expression. But here it is, in an expression of the psalmist's faith. We know that people who die in the Lord, it's a blessing. It's precious in the sight of God. Paul, on the other hand, or I should say in parallel with that, is confident in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Verse 14, Psalm or 2 Corinthians chapter 4. "Knowing that he who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus and bring us with you into his presence." Now, I don't know if that's Paul's way of saying precious in the sight of the Lord are those who are, you know, are, is the death of his saints. But at least it's in there somewhere. I don't know if he had it in mind, but it kind of fits, doesn't it? Because we know by the resurrection of Jesus Christ, we too will be resurrected with him. So Paul expresses a great deal of faith in this first section. He shows us a parallel between the faith of Old Testament faithful people, and he draws it over into the New Testament. He says, guys, we've got to do the same thing. We believe, therefore we speak. But then in the next section, Paul gives us these, what simply are a bunch of contrasts. And I think here is where we kind of draw on the extension of what the apostle has done back in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, where he contrasts the wisdom of the world and the wisdom of God. He's going to show us some more contrasts in the way we think. And these are good things. The contrasts are good things, but there are contrasts, and sometimes maybe that creates a little bit of a struggle for us because we have to live with these contrasts. Paul will say, first of all, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16, we do not lose heart. And that, in part, is what sometimes happens to us, does it not, when we struggle with the world? We can lose heart. Maybe it can cause us to doubt. Maybe we get tired of the struggle. Maybe we get tired of reasserting our faith. Maybe we get tired of living among people who are all liars. You know, what the psalmist says in Psalm 116. But I want you to see the contrasts here, because these are contrasts we can live with. These are good contrasts in a way. Verse 16, contrast between the outer and the inner. The outer nature and the inner nature. The outer nature is wasting away, he says in verse 16. That's our physical bodies. It's interesting to me that in Romans chapter 8 and verse 22, Paul makes this kind of odd statement that he says, nature is groaning. Nature itself is groaning under the weight of the condition that the world is in. This sinful condition that it's in. Nature itself is kind of groaning, okay? And our outer natures are wasting away. And, you know, for those of us who've got, you know, a little bit whiter hair, we're beginning to experience how, in fact, our outer nature is beginning to waste away. I mean, I'm not wasting away yet, but I feel the pains a little bit more. You know, the older I get, they last a little bit longer, harder to heal. You know, things just don't seem to work quite as well. But listen to what the Apostle Paul is telling us here. He says, though our bodies will die, yet we will be transformed. Now, he doesn't say that here, but we know he says that in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Doesn't he? When he talks about the resurrection. Our bodies are going to be sown in mortality, but raised in immortality. Okay? And then he says, although our inner nature our outer nature is wasting away, what's happening to our inner nature? That's being renewed. Deep within our hearts, deep within our very souls, perhaps deeper than we can even talk about, deeper than our bones. Our inner nature is being strengthened and being renewed day by day. The shepherd of our souls, he's beginning to heal us on the inside. And that's what really counts. Though our outer nature is wasting away, our inner nature is being renewed all the time. Then he goes in verse 17, he gives us another contrast. He says, it's sort of this momentary feeling versus the eternal feeling. He says, and you know, the contrast here isn't even between our entire lifespan, but between a moment and eternity. Think about that for a minute. I know we like to talk about our whole lives. In fact, James says our life is like a vapor. You know, it's just here and gone. Well, Paul even talks about one moment. Now, try to compare one moment with eternity. You can hardly compare one moment with a whole lifestyle, a whole lifespan. Here he's comparing a moment with eternity. It's really no comparison at all. It's a dramatic contrast. And he says, though he says the afflictions we experience are momentary, the reward we're going to get is eternal. I think I can live with that contrast. And I think that's Paul's point. He wants us to live with that contrast. He wants us to remember what we experience here. Although it doesn't feel like it at times, it really is momentary. And he says something about the timelessness here, and that is, we can't even compare this to the glory we're going to get. And I think there's a place in our faith, and I here is one of them, where we can let our imaginations run just a little bit. We're not imagining something new, we're not making something up, but we can imagine what the glory of God is going to be like. And I think there's a place for kind of letting that run here just a little bit. He says you really can't even compare it. So I don't know if your imagination is like mine, but I would like to let it run a little bit here and think about what I am going to have in that eternal time span I'm going to experience. Should be pretty good. At the very least, it should be pretty good. It's probably going to be better than pretty good because it really has no comparison. He gives us another contrast, versus the things seen and versus things unseen. You see, a strictly materialist view, a view of humanity that doesn't see spiritual things cannot grasp this. You see, things like love, kindness, justice, mercy, those aren't material things. And he says, you see, those seen transient things are contrasted with the unseen eternal things. And those are the things that we focus on. Those are the things that we want to have in our lives. Finally, he contrasts the tent of this material body versus the building that we're going to get from God. And that's in chapter 5 and verse 1. We kind of live in a tent. But we have a dwelling in heaven made by God. You remember, of course, Jesus promises that he goes to prepare a place for the disciples. How many of you have been camping? You know, you've lived in tents. I know for some of us, going camping is more like living in a Motel 6 or something. That's about the closest thing to camping some of us would prefer to have. But the fact is, think about living in a tent. Think about some of the refugees in the nations right now that are living in tents. It's not a great experience. We're kind of living in a tent here. These bodies we have, this place we live, it's temporary. And we need to keep that in mind. But we have something better. We have an eternal home. We know by faith and by the promises made by Christ that Jesus is gone and has gone to prepare a place for us. And so these are some contrasts that Paul wants his audience to remember. And he's trying to encourage them about it. He says, I know you got all these things, but you still got this other thing. And that's a vision of a heavenly dwelling. And that's what we have here, really, in verses chapter 5, verses 2 through 6. For in this tent we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling. So there's a longing that's inside of us that we have for that heavenly place. It's okay to have that longing. It's a good longing to have. It's a good vision to keep before us at all times. And we groan until we receive it. I don't like the groaning part, but I like knowing that my groaning is going to be fulfilled at some time and it's going to end. And that's the point that I believe Paul wants us to know. He says, we long for mortality and our mortality will be swallowed up by life. Chapter 5, verse 4. It's going to be swallowed up. Perhaps this is the greatest contrast between the people of faith and those who don't have faith. We have a hope. We have a vision for what's going to be for us on the other side of this tent that we live in. We have a vision of what will be, and it's a pretty good vision. I think Paul's saying, hang on to that vision. Maintain that. Though we live with all these contrasts, you see, Paul says essentially, we all have hope. It's the same faith that was brought before us back in days of old in Psalm 116. It's that same faith that they had. They didn't have the full and complete understanding of the resurrection. They knew something about those who die in the Lord are blessed, but they didn't quite have the complete idea of God came, God died, God was resurrected for us. We got that. We got a more complete idea of what's going on, but the vision is still the same. And the contrasts, unfortunately, are still the same, but the hope that we have is still the same. And like the Apostle Paul, our faith prompts us to give thanks and to speak, simply to be witnesses of that in the world. And so I think we can justifiably say what the Apostle Paul says here, do not lose heart. The afflictions of this life cannot be compared to the glory that we will receive when we get to the next life and when we put off this empty tent. Remember, eternity awaits. Keep your faith. Be confident. Live with some of the contrasts, but know that there's something better awaiting you. If there's any need that you have this morning, we hope you'll, if nothing else, say something to Wayne or I or somebody else. We want to pray with you or pray for you. Whatever your need might be on that or for that, we certainly want to give you the opportunity to just say, I kind of need some prayers. You know, if you don't want to come forward, just see one of us at some point and we can talk to you and encourage you. Whatever your need might be, think about it now as we stand together and sing our song of encouragement.